Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Week one of the NFL season is almost in the books. Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and I'll tell you, I really look forward to Monday shows once football season is here. We will spend some time talking about the NFL, which I was pleasantly surprised at the play yesterday. I thought it would be 2, maybe even 3 weeks before we saw that kind of play. I thought the quality was just fine. The officiating, there were some missed calls, a lot of missed calls in a lot of games. Well, we'll get to the NFL in just a bit. Also yesterday, we got the first AP college football rankings. Those were released, and a lot of teams dropped out. No more Pac-12, no more Big Ten. That may change because the Big Ten is meeting to get the college football season off and rolling in their conference. But as of right now, things changed, and they changed drastically. For instance, Florida jumps 3 spots from number 8 to number 5. Notre Dame up 3 spots from 10 to 7. Auburn up 3 spots from 11 to 8. Texas up 5 spots from 14 to 9. Texas A&M up 3 spots from 13 to 10. A lot of changes inside that top 10. Alabama up 1 spot because Ohio State dropped out. Oklahoma up 2 spots to number 3. So some big changes throughout the top 10. And then there was some changes at the bottom of that top 25 as well. If you're a BYU fan, you have something to smile about. The Cougars are ranked. They're number 21 right now after thrashing Navy. And Army, number 22. So some changes at the bottom of the top 25 rankings. Louisiana is ranked for the very first time ever. They are at number 1. Appalachian State is number 23. Some massive, massive changes in the top 25. I'll tell you, for as crazy and ridiculous as 2020 has been, I did chuckle yesterday at the fact that Louisiana, Appalachian State, and BYU are all ranked higher than Ohio State and USC. I'd be lying if I said that didn't make me chuckle, because it did. BYU, Louisiana, Appalachian State, all ranked higher than those schools that I just mentioned, because again, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they're not playing. Now, as far as the Big Ten returning, there was some news that popped up yesterday. The presidents and chancellors met yesterday, but they have not voted yet on whether to accelerate the league's return to the football field. The meeting was the second of the weekend for the university leaders, and they are expected to vote in the coming days on a plan that could have the league schools playing football before the end of October. But again, I still think it's too late. I mean, I really don't know how you can include the Big Ten in the college football playoff if they're not going to play until the end of October. By that point in time, you have ACC, SEC, and Big 12 teams that could have 7 games under their belt by that point in time. Now, as far as a return for the Pac-12, according to ESPN, their most aggressive plan would be to return mid to late November. And again, it's the same situation. I don't know what the schedule would look like, but at that point in time, the NCAA cannot consider these conferences for the college football playoff. You just can't do it. I mean, the season is supposed to be getting September. We had 2 conferences that really jumped the gun, should not have canceled the season, and they did. And while it is unfortunate for those schools and those kids that participate, in my mind, the Big Ten or the Pac-12, they have to be ruled out of the college football playoff for this season. This is also a factor that you have to consider. Ohio State, Sean Wade, potential top 10 pick in the upcoming NFL draft in 2021, He's opting out of his senior season because he is going to prepare for the NFL draft. See, this is something else that will affect the Big Ten of the Pac-12 if they return to play. There's uncertainty on if they're ever going to have a season, and because of this, a potential top 10 pick in the draft is going to forgo his remaining year of eligibility and just work on moving to the next level. And if you are unfamiliar with the type of talent that Sean Wade possesses, he was a preseason All-American, and he was listed as the number 7 prospect on Mel Kiper's board moving into the month. So he's been projected as an early round pick in the NFL draft for quite some time, even last year. But he decided to come back to Ohio State for one more season. And so nobody can look at Wade's decision to say, I'm done, I'm preparing for the 2021 draft, because we have no idea what the Big Ten season is going to look like. And if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are not eligible to participate in the college football playoff, well, then why would any of these potential top picks decide to play college football? I mean, seriously, this is what we're going to see. So this is going to be a very weird college football season. I don't think there's any question about it. And look, colleges, they're not going to report on student athletes coming down with COVID-19. I watched the Notre Dame-Duke game. The Notre Dame depth chart did not look the way I expected it to look. A lot of familiar faces not playing. We don't know why. Well, we do, but we don't, because the school's not going to release the names. There will be schools that are hit with COVID-19. For instance, Memphis was hit by COVID-19, and they have to push back their games a couple of weeks. So it's really going to be interesting as far as college football is concerned. It may make it the most interesting or bizarre season that we have ever seen when the history books are written. One thing we know in the NFL, all 32 teams are playing, and we got off to that start yesterday, and we have 4 more teams playing tonight as we wrap up week 1. The Pittsburgh Steelers are on the road to take on the New York Giants. We'll have the Tennessee Titans and the Denver Broncos as well. Pittsburgh and New York will kick off at 5:15, so about an hour from now, that game will air live on ESPN. And then in the nightcap, it's the Titans and the Broncos. So that's what we're looking at as far as the NFL is concerned. We had a great game last night, Rams-Cowboys. Rams pick up a 20-17 win. A lot of positives, I thought, for both teams, the Rams and the Cowboys. And the other marquee matchup was an afternoon game between Tampa and New Orleans. This was the highest-rated game of the weekend. Tom Brady statistically did not look great against the Saints. I don't think that Tom Brady played bad. Statistically, he wasn't good. And we'll talk about Brady in Tampa Bay, what went wrong yesterday. Bruce Arians flat out said after the game, Tom Brady made some bad mistakes. And when I look at the Saints, they take home a 34-23 win. If it lasts another minute, it's 41-23, because the game came to an end with the Saints on the 1-yard line. But I didn't think that Drew Brees was fantastic yesterday either. And I came to the realization when I'm watching this game, we have 2 of the greatest to ever do it. In fact, when you look at the individual accomplishments, it was the greatest regular season quarterback matchup that we have ever had. Seriously, just looking at the accomplishments of these two players, there were 7 Super Bowl championships and over 1,000 touchdown passes between those two quarterbacks yesterday. We've never seen that. But they are both in their 40s. And at times, they both looked like they were in their 40s. We'll talk about that game a little bit later. Speaking of aging quarterbacks, yeah, the Green Bay Packers, they don't need Jordan Love. No, they don't need him. Aaron Rodgers was fantastic yesterday. We'll talk about that contest as well a little bit later on in the show. Next segment, I want to talk NBA basketball. We don't have any NBA games tonight, but we are gearing up for what should be a fascinating Tuesday. The best words in the NBA, it's Game 7, right? We get the Nuggets and the Clippers tomorrow night. Game 7, the winner will move on to play the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers were up 3-1 in this series. The Nuggets, again, down 3-1, just like they were against the Jazz. They have now forced a Game 7. The Nuggets play better when they are down in the teens. I mean, seriously, the Clippers had this game won. I thought it was over and done with. We're talking about the Battle of LA, the Clippers and the Lakers. The Nuggets go on a 50-21 run. They come back and they win this game yesterday. And now it sets up for a very interesting Game 7 where, essentially, there is no pressure on this Denver Nugget team. It is all on the Los Angeles Clippers. And I was thinking about this yesterday, going back to marquee closeout games. Doc Rivers has had a problem outside of the 1 year where he won an NBA championship in 2008. They topped the Lakers in Game 6. They lost Game 5, which was a closeout game, but they came back and they took out the Lakers in Game 6. You go to the next year, Boston trying to repeat as champions, they blew a 3-2 series lead to the Magic. The year after that, they blew a 3-2 series lead to the Lakers. Fast forward another year, a break, and then a year, they blew a 3-2 series lead to the Heat. This seems to be a reoccurring theme with Doc Rivers. And I'll tell you, part of me wants to pick the Nuggets now to win Game 7. I said going into the series that it would be drawn out. The Nuggets could win two games. I did not think Denver could beat the Clippers four times. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they have figured something out. When you win three games in a series, and in two of those wins you come back from double-digit second-half deficits, you have figured something out. And it's not as if this Clipper team is loaded with championship experience. So we'll talk about that next segment on the show. That game was yesterday morning, and it kind of slipped under the radar because of week one of the NFL. But all in all, I mean, my goodness, it was a fascinating contest, and the Nuggets just blew the Clippers out of the water in the fourth quarter. Tomorrow, we also get game one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. So like I said, I want to talk NBA next segment, then we'll save the rest of the show for NFL football. That's a quick look at what's happening to the national sports front. We can take a look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard. We need to do that before we go to a commercial break because there's all kinds of day baseball going on right now. The Cincinnati Reds, they hold a 1-0 lead over the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's an important game as far as the National League playoff race is concerned. The Marlins, who are at 23-21, and an important game with the Phillies, who are at 23-22. That one all Miami right now, 4-1 in the top of the sixth inning. Cardinals and Brewers right now tied at the bottom of the third, 0-0. We have the A's and the Mariners. It's the A's up 1-0 in the bottom of the third inning of that contest. Still to come tonight, game two of a doubleheader for the Pirates and the Reds. We get the Braves and the Orioles at 5:30. The Twins will take on the White Sox inside 6 o'clock. Then we get the Cardinals and the Brewers. That'll be game two of their doubleheader. Game two of a doubleheader between the A's and the Mariners. And we have can't-miss baseball tonight between the Dodgers and the Padres. It's a battle for the NL West. The Dodgers right now just 2.5 games up on the Padres for first place in that division. Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers tonight. Start time for that game is set for 7:10. That's a quick look at what's happening to the national sports front. Local sports recap is coming up. Plus, we'll be joined by Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com to talk NBA, and then we'll jump over and talk NFL. It's all straight ahead right here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
The two best words in the NBA, it's Game 7. We've had a couple of those. We had the Celtics and the Raptors, and now we're gearing up for an unlikely Game 7, the Nuggets and the Clippers. It'll mark the second time the Nuggets have gone to Game 7 after trailing 3-1 in a series at the bubble. And joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have Jameson Welsh, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider from BasketballNews.com. And Jameson, I look forward to the conversations every Monday. I know last Monday was a holiday, so we missed you, so it's great to get back on the air.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
All right, let's start by talking about the unlikely story in the Western Conference. And when I say unlikely, I'm saying it's unlikely because it was 3-1. Clippers-Nuggets. It's not unlikely in my mind that the Nuggets took this seven games. In fact, going into the series, I thought Denver was good enough to force it to 6 or 7. I didn't know if they were good enough to get the win. But the reason it's so unlikely is because we're watching a team built around Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, arguably the deepest team in the league, with a championship head coach, and they have blown a 3-1 series lead while blowing double-digit leads in two games. That is definitely concerning.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely concerning, but you also got to remember that depth is only as good when it's playing well. When that depth isn't playing up to expectations, there's a problem, and right now they're not. As good as Lou Williams has been in the past and as good as Montrezl Harrell has been in the past, currently in the bubble, they have not been good. And that's a huge issue. You know, if you're trying to win a championship and you're counting on 35-plus points a game off the bench and you're not getting that, well, where do you make that up? Because it's the reason why you're getting those points from the bench players. So if you're not able, if you're getting like half the production, or maybe like sometimes some instances less than half, and then the defense is slipping on top of that, then you're in a really tough spot, and that's what's been going on. Now, luckily for them, Kawhi has been pretty amazing in these playoffs, and Paul George has, you know, his moments in the previous series, but in this series, he's been pretty good, and they're having some issues. So I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with their bench guys. You know, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are the two guys that really put them to another level. If those guys aren't playing well, Denver will beat them tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree with you. And to be fair, look, I will always admit when I was wrong. And when the Nuggets were down 3-1 in the series against the Jazz, I said that this team had quit on Mike Malone. And if I'm not mistaken, a lot of people probably agreed with that sentiment. You and I had a conversation about that.
Yeah. There was an article that the Denver Post came out with saying, hey, it's the reason why this team was the last team to come into the bubble.
Right.
The reason why this is going on, that's going on, this is going on. So you ain't got nothing to be sorry about. I was on the same boat. And it didn't look like they quit. However, Mike Malone made some adjustments. He tweaked the lineup a little bit. And one of the biggest adjustments is playing Michael Porter Jr. more. Instead of just saying, hey, we're going to play either him or Millsap 35 minutes. No, let's play them both about 25 minutes tonight because they both bring different things to the table. It bounces off their lineup, and they've been better for it. So they're, you know, he's made adjustments. That's what good coaches do. At the end of the day, you can only coach what you got. And what you got is you got to make adjustments when you got that talent. He's made a lot of adjustments in this series and in previous years before, but I give him a lot of credit because a lot of coaches would have been like, all right, well, we want to leave the bubble anyway, or we're away from our families, all this and that. No, he put in some game plans. He's gotten his guys to play hard, and here we are.
Looking at what the Nuggets have been able to accomplish, and again, you mentioned Michael Porter Jr. This is a guy that is definitely a liability on the defensive end of the floor. But on the offensive side, I mean, he can make up for it. And I know he had some critical comments when this team fell behind 3-1. He received a lot of criticism on social media. I didn't believe he deserved any of the criticism that he was getting because what he said made a lot of sense. Is that a good sign to you? Do you respect the fact that you have a kid like Michael Porter Jr. who is this young, on a team with some seasoned vets such as a Paul Millsap? You could throw Jokic in there as a seasoned vet. This is a guy that got a very hefty contract, yet he's the one that's speaking up, and it looks like the Nuggets responded very well to that. To me, that shows continuity within a team, and instead of criticizing the young man, Jameson, I applaud him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing. Coaches have a very tough job. Everyone thinks it's just X's and O's, but it's actually more than that. You got to manage personalities. You got to manage ego. You got to make sure everybody is mentally and physically ready to play. Like, it's a tough job. And a guy like Michael Porter Jr. is a very young guy with a lot of talent. And he's a guy that was the best player in his high school class when he was coming out. He had some back injuries, had some other stuff going on. And, you know, things didn't go right away as he had planned. But he's legit. Like, he's a legit player. He's going to help Denver in the future. He's part of their future. So he's a guy that can swing a series, and if he gets hot, and that's the one thing about Game 7, if he gets hot, the Clippers have no answer for him. Like, it's already tough dealing with Jokic and Murray. If a guy like Michael Porter Jr., who's a great shooter, and if he hits five or six threes in a game, you're in trouble because you didn't anticipate that. That's a guy that you don't have an answer for. And if the Clippers are playing with a very dangerous situation, they're playing with a team that has nothing to lose and has a lot of confidence. And Jamal Murray, I say this all the time, he is nowhere near the player of Kobe Bryant. He never will be. However, his confidence, he has Kobe-like confidence that he doesn't care. He will come down and shoot that thing up. He will take that thing to the hole. He might be 0 for 5. He might be 1 for 10. But going up, and he got the confidence like he just hit 10 in a row. And that, to me, is very dangerous when the game is close and you got a guy that is able to live with the results. So be very, very careful with the Nuggets. It would not surprise me if they were to advance tomorrow night.
Okay, we can end the conversation on the Western Conference by talking about the Clippers. Doc Rivers in closeout games, he's not the best. I mean, he's really not. I mean, that's something that has plagued Doc Rivers through his entire coaching career. Outside of the Game 6 victory that the Celtics had over the Lakers in 2008, Doc Rivers has not been good in closeout games.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, he's been pretty bad. And the next year after that, they lost to Orlando in seven. I believe they're up 3-2 in that series.
Yep.
The year after that, they play the Lakers in a series where
they were up 3-2.
And it was in that series.
Yep.
I believe either the next year or the year after, they were up 3-2 versus Miami in a series. No, it was 2 years after that. They were up 3-2 in the conference finals and still did not get it done. So, you know, there are some patterns here. However, being up 3-1 to a team that is like 2 years away from being a serious contender and being in this situation is not a good sign, because not everyone feels the same way right now. It's one thing going to game five, you're up 3-1, that's one thing. But right now, you know, there's some nervousness in that locker room. And Paul George, we know he's had difficulties in the playoffs. Like, we know his situation. So it would not surprise me, again, if the Denver Nuggets beat the Clippers tomorrow night.
Are you picking the Nuggets?
Man. You know what? Why not? Why not? Three in a row. It's 2020. Why not? They have played this well thus far. No one has given them a chance. They were counted out left for dead. In game five, I think they were down like 18 or 19 points and came back. Same thing the other night or the other morning. I give them a really good shot to win, so why not?
And if you're the Lakers, you want the Nuggets, right? You don't want the Clippers. You want the Nuggets.
Of course. I mean, you match up. You know what I mean? Denver and Utah are the token matchups for the Lakers because they have a bunch of big guys. Lakers can play small. They have a lot of different things they can do to make things hell for Jokic. If you're the Lakers, you definitely want Denver. That's a no-brainer, because the problem with the Clippers and the Denver matchup is the Clippers don't have a big guy that can literally defend or make things difficult for Jokic or just run up and down the court that's faster than Jokic. So it presents a lot of challenges. Lakers have a lot, all the above. So, yeah, it would be a very quick series. The Clippers, I think Lakers are fine going into either series. However, the Clippers have Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard is an amazing player. He is a guy that he can get his own shot. He has proven that he can take big shots. He can carry a team when necessary. He's going to need some help tomorrow night, but he's a guy that, if you can avoid him, you do that at all costs.
Let's move over to the Eastern Conference, Jamison. Tomorrow night we'll get Game 1, Heat-Celtics, 4:40 start time for an Eastern Conference championship contest. It is unlikely. Look, anyone that could have predicted the Heat-Celtics at the beginning of the postseason, kudos to you. I did not expect Boston to get past Toronto. I thought Toronto would represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. Boston, though, that's not a huge surprise. The Miami Heat, that's a surprise. I mean, let's just be real, especially by the way they handled the Milwaukee Bucks. They handled them with relative ease. And so when you look at this particular matchup from an X's and O's standpoint, I absolutely love it. I mean, Eric Spoelstra, Brad Stevens, sign me up for that all the way around. But when you look at two particular players in the series, Jimmy Butler and Marcus Smart, boy, that is old school mentality. People that were a fan of the NBA back in the golden era can look at those two players and relate to them. They're very fun to watch, and this is going to be a very entertaining series.
So you're absolutely correct. However, Miami played Milwaukee very well during the regular season.
They did.
This was not a surprise. Like, I don't think it's a shock or anything. I think Milwaukee has been a bit overrated. And here's the issue I have, Jordan. A lot of these small market teams, when they start out very well and they got, you know, they got some positive stuff going on, the media likes that story and they gravitate towards that story because they want that to be a thing. They want that to become, oh, wow, this small market team wins the whole thing, or this small market team made the finals. They gravitate towards that a lot more than a big market team such as the Lakers doing what they're doing. Milwaukee had a lot of hype throughout the whole season, but at the end of the day, they're still going to the playoffs with the same roster they had last year, minus Malcolm Brogdon. So to me, it was like, you guys didn't get better over the offseason, and you have a guy that won MVP again, but you're in the same situation as you were last year. You might be even a little bit worse because now the book is out on you guys and how to play you guys. So for me, I think of it a little bit differently. I thought Miami was got better throughout the season, but that matchup for Miami was key. I thought that they're very confident in playing Milwaukee, and they were not afraid of Milwaukee at all. Similar to how Denver is not afraid of the Clippers. It's very similar to that.
We'll end with this. Eastern Conference, who comes out on top?
Miami and seven.
I'm going to go with Boston. And again, if we're talking about the Clippers Nuggets, I agree with you on everything that you said about the Nuggets. It is difficult for me to go against the Clippers at a Game 7. But Going back to what you pointed out, Jameson, when you respond from a double-digit deficit in two consecutive closeout games, you have figured something out. And there's a different mindset, right? The Clippers will be a tad bit more tight, even though Kawhi Leonard has that experience, that championship experience. No one else on that team does. And so for me, looking back at the way the games have gone over the last two contests, I can see Denver winning that series. There's no doubt the Clippers are the better team, and I typically side with the most talented squad. So I'm going to go with the Clippers and the Celtics, but I would not be surprised one bit if it's Miami that comes out of the East and it's the Nuggets that top the Clippers. I think both are neither one would be a huge shock. Let's put it that way.
You're absolutely correct. But the reason why I have Miami is that Miami has the versatility and the wing defenders to slow down Tatum and Brown. And I'm not saying they're going to stop him, because Tatum is really good. He's going to do his stuff. But the addition of Andre Iguodala, while having Jimmy Butler and Crowder and guys like that to constantly defend those wing guys, that's huge. That's something that Toronto didn't have, because there was times where Lowry had to guard Brown or Tatum, and we know that's not a good matchup. But being able to have several wings to throw at those guys throughout the whole game, that's a totally different situation regarding that. But also, Bam Adebayo, this is coming out party. He played Giannis very well in the last series. This is going to be his series, because the Celtics have zero answer for him.
Jameson Walsh, you get at basketballnews.com. Jameson, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, you got to let the listeners know about the podcast. Fantastic stuff that you're doing at basketballnews.com.
Yes, basketballnews.com. We just had Ray Allen on for 100 minutes. He was an amazing interview. Gave a lot of different insight. He hasn't shared before on a different platform, so he was really cool. We have a couple others coming up. I believe David West is coming up on Thursday as well. So really cool stuff. ESPN 1100 out here in Vegas as well. Kadon 720. I think there are some others. But yeah, those are the main ones. And I'll be around throughout the season.
Looking forward to it. Jameson, again, thank you for the time. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return again, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM KOAL.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
As far as the NFL goes, today's the classic Overreaction Monday. And we're 1 week into the season. Some things did not go accordingly. And today we're second-guessing everything that happened over the course of the offseason. I mean, that happens every year. Because on paper, we expect one thing, but we completely forget about the process. And it's happening again on this Monday afternoon. And it's all built around the biggest game of the week, which was not the Sunday night game between the Rams and Cowboys. I thought it was a great contest, and we can talk about the Cowboys in just a moment, but I want to start by talking about the Saints and the Buccaneers. Because New Orleans comes out on top 34-23 in this win, we're not talking about Drew Brees going 18 of 30 for 160 yards and two scores, which was not a great performance for Drew Brees. There were times in this game where I looked at Drew and thought, eesh. But again, we're talking about an aging quarterback and no preseason. We are talking about Tom Brady, who goes 26 of 36, 239 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. And Brady actually now is in the history book. He has tied a record set by Matt Schaub, who had three straight games with a pick six. And that's what Brady has now had. Now, I know expectations were through the roof for Tampa Bay. And on the opening drive, and Brady caps it off with a one-yard touchdown run, spikes the ball. I mean, that was like a Gronk spike in the end zone. You're thinking, wow, this Buccaneer team looks really, really good. Then the offense started to stall out. The offense was held scoreless throughout the remainder of the first quarter, scoreless throughout the second. Tampa Bay trailed 17-7 at the end of the first half. And things did not get much better for the offense from that point on. In fact, the two interceptions that Brady threw, both were his fault in this game. The pick six was not a good throw. It took place at the beginning of the third quarter. It was like 13 minutes left to play, something around that mark in the third quarter. Pick six goes to the sideline. It was not very Tom Brady-esque. But again, here's what we have to remember. Brady was in one system for 20-plus seasons. He joins a new head coach. He joins a new supporting cast. He joins a head coach that wants to throw the ball downfield. And I think this is something that is overlooked in this game. Tom Brady's arm strength has been diminishing. It has been for the last 5 years. It was noticeable last year. Part of the reason why I thought New England was done is because of the lack of arm strength from Brady. Yesterday, he showcased his ability to throw the football downfield. And something that will not show up in the stat book. Brady had 4 pass interference calls against New Orleans that went for over 100 yards. That's important. You're not going to see that on the stat line, but that's a lot of yardage. So if you take that into consideration, he nearly threw the ball for 400 yards. 100 yards in penalties from the Saints based off pass interference alone. That's important. Yes, there's some timing issues. Yes, I think the Bucs are going to be just fine. He's got Chris Godwin. He's got Mike Evans. Rob Gronkowski was not existent in the game yesterday. I think he had 2 catches for 11 yards. Gronk was not existent. But the Buccaneers have weapons. Now, as far as the Saints are concerned, Drew Brees played so-so, and they still found a way to get a win. Jared Cook was great. Another viable season, I believe, is on the horizon for this guy as a safety net for Drew Brees. I thought Alvin Kamara looked great in his first game since getting the extension. Should have had 3 touchdowns. They took one away late in the contest in the final seconds. Otherwise, again, that score is 41-23. But Bruce Arians did not pull any punches. He flat out said, this was our quarterback's fault. Tom Brady took full accountability for it as well. I think Tampa Bay is going to be just fine. Again, no preseason hurts Tom Brady a lot more than, say, Drew Brees. It's a brand new, it's a whole new regime. From franchise to the coaching staff. I mean, there's so much unfamiliarity. And regardless of what they were able to do in the offseason, they got no reps. They got no preseason reps. And so pump the brakes just a tad. I saw some positives from Brady. Again, this guy is 42, 43 years old. I understand that part of his game, at this point in time, he may be what he is. But I did see some positives that I think Tampa Bay can build off of. Now let's talk about the Sunday night game. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help dissect what we saw last night. First off, SoFi Stadium is absolutely gorgeous. It is insane.
It's nice, right?
Oh, nice. Oh, that thing is... That's what $5 billion will buy you. I'm a little bit sad that there was no fanfare around it, but that stadium is just insane. So, high expectations for the Dallas Cowboys. Contract year for Dak Prescott, new head coach Mike McCarthy. High expectations around this squad. They're on national TV. They give Jerry Jones the opportunity to have his squad open up SoFi because he played such an intricate part in getting the Rams back to L.A. And the Rams beat them. And first, I've been saying this all off season. I don't understand why the pundits are so low on this Los Angeles Ram team. And so today, Cowboy boards, Cowboy fans are upset about this loss. You lost by 3 points to a playoff team on the road. And I still believe the Rams, if they stay healthy, they are a playoff team. They play in the toughest division in football. But ultimately, if I'm a Cowboy fan, I don't think last night's loss is an embarrassment.
No, because I didn't think Dallas was going to win anyways.
I didn't think they were going to win last night
no.
either.
I picked the Rams to win that game, and like you said, the Rams are a very good football team.
They're a good team.
People are low on them and don't understand it. It's not an 8-win team. It's a 10-win, 11-win team. They're going to make the playoffs.
They're not a Super Bowl team. I don't believe the Rams can win the Super Bowl, but I believe that the Rams are a top 6 team in the NFC. And this is another positive that Cowboy fans can look at. It's 14-13 Dallas at halftime, and I have no idea why, because the Rams dominated the first 2 quarters of that game. The only reason Dallas was in this contest is because Dak Prescott had command offensively. That's what you have to look at. He had command of this game, and that's a great sign for the Cowboys.
And then the pressure got to him. The Rams dialed up the defense, switched things around, kind of threw Dak off his game. They got him. They rattled him a little bit, and he really never got back into a rhythm in that second half. And the Rams come through when they need to the most. That was an offensive pass interference. It was a good call.
It was an offensive pass interference. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah,
it was.
He got his arm up. He pushed off. That's a good call because they missed the one on Goff. So I don't want to hear anything about that. The Rams are a better football team.
I don't disagree with you. And I know that Mike McCarthy, he made the mistake of going for it on 4th and 3 inside the red zone. He kicked the field goal. You tie the game.
Yeah, take the points.
I agree.
On the road, take the points.
But I will say this. If it's successful, let's say they go for it and CeeDee Lamb gets past a rookie safety and picks up a first down. Today, we're not talking about Mike McCarthy making a blunder. We're sitting here talking about, oh my gosh, it's so nice that the Cowboys have an aggressive head coach. It's so nice that Jason Garrett is no longer in control of this team. Oh boy, this is exactly what this franchise has needed. I don't want to hear anything about it. The Cowboys are fine. The Cowboys will probably win the NFC East, but the Rams are a lot better than pundits predicted. And you and I both got a lot of grief from people telling us there's no way this is a 10-win team when we did the over-unders last week. If this team is healthy, they have the talent. So this is not a bad loss for the Cowboys. It's not a bad loss at all.
It's not a bad loss. So, I didn't think they were going to win anyways because the Rams are a good team. It's not a bad loss. Now you go into next week, you got your home opener, take care of business. But they're still going to win the East because the East is not very good.
And there were two games that, and I'm going to say that the Ram-Cowboy game, I don't know that the Cowboys win the game if they take away the offensive pass interference because
they still have to get down there and kick the field goal.
To send the game into overtime.
To send it in overtime. Right. So even then, yeah. And kickers, you never know.
But in the Bengals-Chargers game, the other LA team, Joe Burrow leads a drive. He connects with A.J. Green in the corner of the end zone, and they called offensive pass interference, which was a great call on that game. It was refreshing to me to see the defense get the benefit of the doubt because another point, you mentioned it. Jared Goff got his head twisted around at a play, and the referees didn't call it. I thought that week one,
which the Rams threw an interception, which they were driving.
They were driving.
So if they call, you know, that penalty, it's 15 yards. The Rams are going to at least put up three on that drive.
Yeah. So ultimately, looking at what happened in that game, and looking at the course of all the other games throughout the week, throughout yesterday, I thought that the referees were a little bit more lenient towards the defense. And that is good to see because it's such an offensive game. So I had no problem with the offensive pass interference in either game. It was blatant in that Charger-Bengal contest. But that was the right call last night in the Ram-Cowboy game.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad they called it because he got his hand extended, got his arm up, and pushed away.
Week one takeaways. Those were the two big games. Buccaneers, Saints, Rams-Cowboys. Tonight, we get Pittsburgh and the Giants. We get the Titans and the Broncos. Who do you like in these games tonight?
I'm going to go Pittsburgh, and I will go Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm probably going to roll with the Titans as well. I think home field.
I just don't know how good the Giants are. Defensively, I don't think they're very good. Offensively, they're not going to have Golden Tate, so that's a weapon that's off the board. I think Pittsburgh's just a little bit better.
Well,
not
Pittsburgh's
much.
Better. Pittsburgh's better. One of the things that one of the best options for the Giants tonight, it's going to be Ingram, their tight end. Titans did not have success against Steelers last year. And that's going to be one of the top weapons tonight for this young Giants offense.
Now, if Denver had a crowd, I'd probably take Denver.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out because home field changes drastically with no fans in the stands. Drastically.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it really doesn't matter. So, I mean, if that place was rowdy in Denver, because, you know, you and I have both been there, it's a great environment for football. If they had fans, I'd probably take the Broncos, but I'm not going to. I'll take Tennessee, because I think Tennessee can run the ball, and I just don't think Denver can slow down Derrick Henry.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. One more segment on the horizon when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Barker. And you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Now remember, help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
But to close out this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, fun show. Glad NFL football's back. Travis, I'm going to end with this. You watched football all day yesterday. I watched football all day yesterday. We had the Raiders back here on KOAL. Biggest blunder of week one. And it goes to a rookie head coach in my mind, Matt Rhule not giving Christian McCaffrey the ball on 4th-and-1 at the 50-yard line down 34-30 to the Raiders. I mean, if you're a Raider fan, you love it. But you just made this guy the highest paid running back in the history of the NFL. You have 4th-and-1 and you don't give him the ball?
Yeah,
I don't understand that.
No excuse for that. You have to give him the ball in that situation. He's your franchise player, best player. If you're going to lose the game on a handoff to him, that's how you're going to go out.
No question.
I mean, you just can't do that.
And Rhule said at the end of the game, yeah, this one's on me. Yeah, it is. Now, yeah. I don't know if the Panthers would have went down and won the game, but nonetheless, my goodness, you have Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. And if I'm not mistaken, last year we had the same argument with Ron Rivera. Remember the game against the Buccaneers? I think it was against Tampa Bay, if memory serves me right. They didn't go to Christian McCaffrey deep into the red zone, and we couldn't understand why. They decided to go for it instead of going. I can't remember the situation exactly, but my goodness, give Christian McCaffrey the football. It's really that simple. I could not understand it. And then I don't know if you watched the Chargers and the Bengals.
Yeah, some of it.
Okay, Joe Burrow was cool, calm, and collected down the stretch. In fact, he had the team's only touchdown. He had a rush that went for, I can't even remember what it was, 20 yards or so. But again, he connected with A.J. Green late in the contest. They took it away, offensive pass interference. And so Randy Bullock comes out to attempt a 31-yard field goal to send the game into overtime, and he shanked it, missed it very badly, missed it to the left. And I mean, apparently he was hurt on the play.
I don't know if he, did he tear something? Because it looked like he might have hurt something in his leg.
Yeah, hurt something in his calf. But the Chargers get away with one because of a missed kick. And look, for Charger fans, kudos to you, because I can't count how many games the Chargers have lost due to a blunder from their kicker. So it made sense for them to get one yesterday. I like Anthony Lynn.
DeAndre Swift for Detroit.
Yeah.
Wide open in the end zone for the win. But Detroit can't allow Chicago to score 20 points but in the fourth quarter.
Mitch Trubisky.
You got to catch the football for one, but two, you can't give up. Did they give up 20 in the fourth? Yeah. I mean, you can't do that to that team and to that quarterback, because that guy, they gave it 21 in the fourth.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
Then the Jets stink. You tried to convince me.
Yeah, they're bad.
And now I don't know where this team goes, because I don't think Sam Darnold's the guy. Adam Gase is clearly not the guy.
It's still too early for that.
They're a mess.
Yeah, give Darnold a little bit of credit. Still too early for that. Out of time on this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Busker. Ready to be safe. We are out.